Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. If you've ever had an interest in paranormal, or if you've encountered experiences of your own that you just don't know how to talk about them or how to be able to bring them up in conversation with people, I know how that can be because you feel very uncomfortable. Well, you're going to find that our guest today, Dr. John J. Harper, he's a man that has followed a journey of his own personal experience regarding the unique. It caused him to choose a choice of exploration that led him to a destination he never thought he would even begin to achieve. My guest, John J. Harper, welcome to the show. Do you mind if I call you John?
John's fine, Donna. Thank you so much. Great to be with you and your audience.
Thank you. Now, you're a clinical hypnotherapist. You also call yourself a futurist. You like doing research, you're a research scientist, and you're an executive director of a not-for-profit corporation that really is involved with all of the things affecting our planet, so to speak, and you like to be actively involved in creating solutions with different people. You also have been a former computer specialist. You were a clinical mental health counselor, which must have been a very interesting experience with the U.S. Department of Defense. And you started on this journey of the mind, which you have put into your book called Transformers, and it's T-R-A-N-C-E, Formers, Shamans of the 21st Century. How did this begin?
For me, Donna, it was quite a stunning change in focus for my life and for my professional interest. From 1968 to June 1993, I was with the Department of Defense, both as an active duty soldier in the U.S. Army, also working for the Air Force and the Navy throughout this country and in Europe. So I was a very traditional left-brain scientist for most of those years. However, what happened to me specifically was in June 1988, I had a profound metaphysical experience with a deceased physics colleague. His name was George Sebastian Vigée III, a very lofty title, but he was a very down-to-earth scientist from Plaquemine, Louisiana. George and I had served in the Army together with the DOD for 17 years from the late 60s through his untimely death in November 1987. George, at age 40, died on the way to work one Monday morning from a massive heart attack. From that event, I was absolutely thrown into a cycle of grief, and I asked to be transferred from Huntsville, Alabama, from the Army Space Command duties to the Navy, where I began work with the Naval Undersea Warfare Center in Keyport, Washington. Well, about 6 months after his death, in November 87 and June, 1988, I saw George stand before me one morning at about 4 a.m. that changed my life focus, like I say, forever.
Wow. Someone standing in front of me. I've had an experience like that, and it is totally indescribable. I don't know that you can use words to express the feeling and sensations you get physiologically, because they're very real. And when you saw him like that, I mean, when you see an energy, they are in the physical form. They have been able to generate themselves to appear in front of you. Did you feel like maybe you needed to be committed for a few days?
Well, I'll tell you what. Yeah, absolutely. I can relate to that sentiment. Maybe longer than a few days. But what happened to me was that I knew the experience was real. I had what I thought was a lucid dream that morning in June 1988 that included my friend George in it. But as I became awake and as I realized what I thought was a dream was not a dream, but was a holographic projection. Of course, back then, we didn't use hologram terminology as much as we do today, but I have a laboratory background in calibration, electronics, and physical standards, and I have been in the laboratories with the instruments, and I understand these fundamental principles of physics. And so I used that knowledge to begin reconciling the physics and the metaphysics, the scientific and the spiritual, something that I had never thought would be possible, certainly in my lifetime. But I'm an open-minded person, but like I say, I hope it's not a gaping hole. And so I used my analytical skills to begin a very lengthy research process. And what I discovered was that the space that we're in is very different than what we think it is. It is multi-layered, is multi-dimensional. And so I believe that, you know, this is where we're headed in our evolution, to see into, as I say, the outer reaches of inner space. And this has to do with the opening of our third eye.
Here we are in a world that is going through tumultuous upheaval. Our Earth is a very, very, very old one. It has been through upheavals like this before. This time around, we have had, I think, an awareness, a perception on the part of many, many people that they can make a difference and they can make a change. Is that why you decided you wanted to write this book, so that you could reach those people that might be open and receptive for what you had to share in it?
It's the only reason that I put my reputation and my sanity on the line. I realized that I was given a gift as a child to perceive and sense these other dimensional realms. As I shared in my book, I've had some other experiences, but I was never a person who, you know, attached themselves really to any organized religion. I did have some experiences with that. They were positive. I don't have anything negative in my resume about it. However, what I found out was that we're each so connected to all that is that it's really not necessary. It'd be like keeping training wheels on a bicycle after you've learned to ride it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely true.
And so I guess what I really want to say on that topic is that I believe we're all called to be shamans of the 21st century, to be, you know, the peace we seek, to be the self-healers that we need. You know, we can't always wait on physicians to heal us.
That is true. And I think that message is being promoted over and over and over again. And, of course, this is something that is rippling down into the younger generation, so that no matter where they are in the world, they can look at what is and say, this isn't acceptable, which is nothing new. That is something that is very important. But what I'm observing, and what I think you have been observing, is that this is happening with people of all ages. It is not something that's going to take 75 years to evolve. It is something that is evolving in a very, very rapid method and patterning, almost as if someone has pushed the fast forward button. And I think within less than 5 years, we're going to see some substantial changes. And within 10 years, we are going to have incredible changes. I mean, we're all, if we do any kind of reading about history and research, we go, wow, look at the changes that have evolved just in the last 50 years. And it is phenomenal. So here you are with this book, Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century. You feel that we are shamans. Yet in your book, you bring out mystical visions of what's considered end time. And, of course, I know people, when they hear that term, it's like, whoops, we've got to ride on the ponies of apocalypse here, and everything's going to come to a dead end. And that's not my reality. That's not the way I look at it. I think we have cycles where it cuts things off completely. This Earth is going to be around for billions of years more, but gee whiz, we do have to have a wake-up call. Tell us about these mystical visions that you put in your book.
Well, you know, I cover the classical visions from the biblical text all the way to, you might say, the more science-based visions of the future that have to do with new technologies. But, you know, let's set some background here for our listeners. one of the great disconnects, I believe, in modern science is this idea that of time being a line. You know, we were handed this idea that there was a past and there's a present and there's a future. Well, you know, in physics today we would say that's not true. In fact, Albert Einstein said that that's an illusion, that there is only the moment of now, and that what we're doing is we're recollecting a memory that we think we have and a future projection as to how we might imagine the future, and we're experiencing that in this moment. And so our choices, this goes back to the choices we make today, how that could impact the experiences we'll have in the next 24 hours, for example. But the reality is these cycles you're talking about, we know now that the megaliths, the pyramids, the Stonehenges, all these ancient structures that are found on sacred sites on this planet, many of them now have cathedrals on them, but these were built on old sites that had energy flows through them that we're just now trying to understand how the magnetic power of the stars was collected in these stones and how these places were of ritual of healing for a reason, because they held the power to heal in them. But the point is that we have golden ages and we have bronze and silver and dark ages or iron ages. Right now the ancients say that we're coming out of the iron age. We're coming out of the age of the metal age of automobiles and airplanes, etc. And we're going to an age of information where the mind now will become more powerful than even the natural laws of physics. Some say, in fact, that the laws of physics will be transforming in a way that we'll actually be able to understand them and use them with our own minds and collectively come together to create a new reality. But overall, what I see is this idea of the golden age that will take a lot of time, of course, to manifest. But what you're seeing and what you're saying is the same as I'm saying in my book, that once we harness the power of DNA, this self-replicating macromolecule that is projecting us into physical form, once we understand that we can tap that 97% of junk DNA, as the biologists used to call it, we will realize that we are mighty powerful spiritual beings and that we have the ability to tap this cosmic consciousness for good, and that we will be able to transform ourselves in unimaginable ways.
You have a comment in here about Nikola Tesla. He proved in his laboratory in Colorado Springs that a single human being can co-generate an electromagnetic field of incredible intensity while remaining calm and in resonance. There have been the mystics that have spoken of this for millenniums, and he proved it in the laboratory. And you refer to the elements of the circuitry connecting the third-dimensional physical cells to an inclusive of the fourth-dimensional light body being very, very well known. Tesla had a very expansive vision of what could be done and where we could go. Was this something that he explored in depth himself?
Yes. In fact, Nikola Tesla, you know, is known now more and more as someone who was the co-founder of alternating current generation, and General Electric was involved in bringing that to the public 100-plus years ago, while Thomas Edison was involved in direct current. But the point there is that Tesla had a very metaphysical understanding of power, of energy, of light, and he used to be able to take, for example, an invention of his, say, a motor, and take it in his mind's eye, into his imagination, and actually run it through the laboratory test first, and I mean in the most minutest detail, and then put it on the laboratory bench to verify his mental pictures of his experiments, and he found that they were perfect. They matched one-to-one. And so after a while, he would not even bother doing the physical test. He would just create the parts, put the motor together, wind the armature to a certain length of wire, for example, and let it run, and it worked perfectly. So this is what I'm talking about. When you open your mind's eye to that level, you can be assured that you're going to create something that you are putting your energy into. We're doing it all the time now, but we're doing it unconsciously.
To get to that conscious phase takes a lot of being present with where you are. In your exploration of developing this talent within yourself, what would you say to anyone that's listening to this show today if they want to become more aware of this connection, because everybody has it. It is not exclusive to just a few. It is part of life, part of what is, part of the universe. What would you say to them?
The first thing is to trust your intuition on the ideas that come to you. Most of us, first of all, are trying to, as I say with tongue-in-cheek, pull our head out of our past. We are caught up in a religious and scientific quagmire, a swamp of ideas, some of which are of value, most of which are not. They're somewhere in the midst of antiquity, and they need to remain there. In other words, our cultures, our schools, our belief systems are holding us back, and in particular, our fear of the unknown. Our fear of the unknown is stopping most of this from manifesting today, because when we go to this higher level of consciousness, every thought will materialize at some level. In other words, you might see a spark of light go in front of you. You might see an event take place that you wish you had not been present, and you'll realize your connection to it. You might get a past life memory, for example, and sense in the moment that this was the problem. This is what caused you to experience what you're experiencing. We have to be brave. We have to be courageous. So that would be a call that I would make to all of us, to drop this idea that there's no meaning to life. It is extremely meaningful, it is extremely wonderful, but it's also very powerful, and we also need to understand that we must bring courage to this task.
You have embarked on this journey. You have gotten to this particular point through studying other cultures as well. Why were the Mayans so important to you?
One of the things that I came across in the literature in the early years, this would be back in the late 1980s. Remember, I had my mind-opening experience with my friend George in June 1988. About in the September of 1990, one evening I was busy looking at some research documents in physics about light phenomenon and trying to link that to consciousness, to our minds. And I had been under a lot of strain at work. I worked by day as an electronics engineer. Had a very, intense job. And then I would come home to a full house, wife and three children. And I was exhausted this particular evening in September 1990. And what happened to me, Donna, was I stressed my third eye, my pituitary pineal gland complex, through stress. I stressed it to the point that I literally opened this gateway to this higher level of consciousness, and it was a shocking experience. It was literally an electromagnetic feeling and sensation. And what happened to me was that my mind expanded. Right where I was at, I suddenly felt the energetic particles, what quantum physics would talk about, as the electrons and protons and neutrons and leptons and hadrons and all these different particles. But being a scientist, what I did was I stayed in the moment. I did not panic, and I stayed there, and I went, this is fascinating. I may be losing my mind. I might even be dying, but I'm going to experience it fully. And what happened to me was I linked up to this higher mind, what Catholic theologian Desjardins called the new sphere, or the sphere of mind. Others would call it the Akashic Records or the mind of God. I didn't call it anything. I was experiencing it as a fact. And what I did at that moment, and it lasted about an hour to an hour and a half for me, I literally just played with this state of consciousness. I asked questions, and as I asked questions on science or religion, the information came to me immediately, instantaneously. There was no doubt. I called it affectionately later the cloud of knowing, based upon the old mystic text, the cloud of unknowing, that Meister Eckhart had called back in, I think, in about the 13th, 14th century. But again, the point is, I had this profound experience in June 88, followed by another one in September 1990, that led me into a new way of looking at our evolution, and I realized this was it, that we are going into the shamanic phase of consciousness, and that I call the fifth dimension being the dimension of light.
Mm-hmm. You bring up three words that I was intrigued with, because I know that in my experience, I feel it's true. Molecules have minds. Molecules have minds. Here you've described an experience that was so profound for you. I've known of other people that have had experiences of their own particular happening that is like yours. I've known people that have gone through an experience that didn't take an hour and a half, but they were given instant information. It's like someone said, okay, we don't have time to talk to you. We're just going to give it to you. Bloop, here you got it. Now you worry about it. I did my job and I'm off. And these people have a phenomenal insight and understanding of things. It's as if someone turned up the receptivity on their thinking processes. And it's amazing. I mean, you would talk to just about any scientist, they have this awareness that they are really someone that has this kind of process for being able to expand. It's an amazing experience. Molecules have mind.
Yes.
Tell us what that means to you.
Well, one of the modern revelations in terms of consciousness and our DNA has come to me through my friend Dr. Bruce Lipton, formerly at Stanford University School of Medicine, who wrote this marvelous book called The Biology of Belief and also wrote the foreword to my book. Dr. Lipton was someone that I was introduced to about 15 years ago that really changed my life. My entire focus on reality changed when he and I shared for many, many hours over the phone initially. Then we met in person a few times and actually brought him to Spokane, Washington to speak to some of our people here. But Dr. Lipton was the right person for me because he was both the scientist, very professional, distinguished cellular biologist, and also, you might say, of the spiritual quality of Albert Einstein. He has that quality to him, that humility and that deep ability to reason well through complex topics. But the idea that our molecules are minded came from Dr. Lipton. I realized that, you know, DNA was extremely important, but I didn't realize that it lived forever, that DNA is immortal. And how I learned that firsthand was when I saw my friend George Vigay stand in front of me that June morning in 1988. He was in a body that looked like liquid mercury. It was crystallized. It was beautiful. It was phenomenal, in one word. And I realized that in order for that to happen, that his DNA must still be forming his physical body, this metaphysical body, if you will, now. But in other words, physics and metaphysics are really not separated only by the level of energy. So what we see here and we call physical, and then we hear someone have a spiritual experience, we're just talking about stepping up two steps on the staircase in energy. This is, you know, there's no separation to anything in reality. So the molecules that we have in our body, these trillions of cells, are managed by DNA and RNA synthesis processes. But without getting too technical here, DNA is a liquid crystal semiconductor, very much like an electronic circuit, like a silicon chip or like the memory chip in your computer. And what is going on, in my opinion, and now many other scientists in Russia, in Europe, in China, and elsewhere have confirmed this in the laboratory, these crystals of DNA are very much like tuning forks. They're tuning to the frequencies that we code them through our consciousness. In other words, when we have a low-level perception of reality, that's exactly where they stay. And when we have our metaphysical experience, it literally jump-starts or shocks, if you will, our DNA memory bank to allow us to communicate at this higher level. And so we really need to focus more on that, this idea that DNA is immortal.
That is something a lot of people would like to say, that, gee, that's really cool. How do we make it so that we stay in this world a lot longer? Well, the chances don't necessarily want to stay around for that long that we adopt when we come in. But here you are with this journey. You have a poem in your book by Thomas Stearns Eliot, and I'll read it. We shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time.
Yes, we're coming full circle.
Where do you think you're going to go from here relative to this research? Because in my experience, it never ends.
It never ends, and the idea, again, about DNA is that, you know, once we learn that we are immortal and that the 97% of the junk DNA corresponds with the 97% of dark matter energy that physicists say, you know, is invisible. And, well, what is, there's nothing invisible if you can filter it through a higher level of energy lens, you might say. To be realistic here, what am I talking about? I'm talking about that when we tune our body as a diamond, you know, we talk about various diets now. We talk about meditation. We talk about yoga. We talk about the martial arts. We talk about all the energy medicine. We're talking about these things as if they're separate and not important, you know, in the larger picture. This is not true, that we carry all this information and this power, this ability within us to transform now, but we keep waiting for some far-off, distant guru or some, you know, somebody that's going to save us from ourselves. And this is an interesting idea, but I don't know how it ever worked. I don't know how that could happen. If you do not believe that this is true now, you won't believe it no matter who tells you it's true.
And we get back to the fact that the mind is totally fluid, that we really have to be alert and aware to ourselves, and that there is a plasticity that can be utilized, but it's only when you're consciously present that you're really going to be able to make it work for you. And for all of what we're bombarded with every day, changes can be made, and it can all start with a single individual. And it can be good, bad, or indifferent, but the changes are there. I liked one comment you made in your book that I don't hear many people discussing, and that is one of the least understood factors in climate change, which is the buzz topic at this point in time, is undersea volcanism. And I agree with that. I've said that for many, many, many years. And that's not something that people want to acknowledge. Why do you think it's so difficult for people to pay attention to what's going on under the earth? Because this earth is always growing and expanding in its own way.
Yes.
Mother Nature is not stagnant. Why do you think they want to always make it other than being aware of those things?
One of the greatest, you might say, desires of most folks is the desire for stabilization. We want to feel solid. We want to feel that everything remains the same. You know, change is what we're afraid of. When you don't understand the cyclic nature of reality, we become fearful. I mean, in ancient times, if a comet passed, it was an omen. If an earthquake came, the gods were angry. If a lightning flashed in front of us, you know, the world was coming to an end. And for some of those that experienced that firsthand, it did come to an end. And so when we saw our deceased, our dead in front of us, the trauma is still in ourselves. The trauma of a huge thunderstorm that went on and on for days, perhaps, is still reverberating in our molecules. So again, fear is what we're trying to process out of us. At these great times of change that we're in today, the 2012 calendar, for example, the Mayans, that are telling us that it's the end of time as we know it, that we're getting ready to go into the fifth sun, to the new age of the sun. And we understand that solar cycle 24, which is upon us now, according to NASA, began in January 2008 with sunspots hitting their maximum about 2012. In fact, I saw a new movie on this yesterday on the History Channel that just blew my mind. It was called Secrets of the Sun, and it spoke to exactly the ideas that I have in my book. And with respect to undersea volcanism, we need to realize that the volcanoes on top of this, of the continents around the Ring of Fire, for example, those are like steam valves. Those are giving off, releasing pressure. And what's happening, though, under the sea, which is just mountain ranges covered by miles and miles of water, salt water, what's going on is we're creating new real estate. That's mm-hmm. the bottom line. The subduction zones, for example, on the west coast of the United States, we know there were 600-plus earthquakes last week recorded by the U.S. Geological Survey. In fact, I've heard some scientists say these signs are ominous for the west coast of the United States. Well, I know this is true. I had an open vision that I shared in my book about the detonation of Mount Rainier, which I know will happen. And I understand that right now there's very, very deep and very powerful forces at work on the Cascadia subduction zone. And I believe that this will lead to a mega earthquake. It's not going to sink any of our land masses. The subduction zones go underneath the tectonic plates. They do not go on top of them. However, we're going to see tremendous earthquakes, and these in themselves are not unsurvivable. We're told on the West Coast, for example, from the St. Andreas Fault to the Seattle fault lines themselves and on to Vancouver, British Columbia, for example, that we live on a very volatile fault line. And so we just need to make preparation. Panic is not necessary, just preparation.
Well, as you can tell, my guest has a lot to share, both from a very scientific, grounded level, as well as from a very personal, intense, spiritual level, and, as he, using his word, a visionary perspective. Transformer, Shamans of the 21st Century, John J. Harper has been my guest. Quickly, John, we're almost out of time. What is your website?
Website is JohnJHarper.com, JohnJayHarper.com.
JohnJHarper.com. Thank you so much, John, for being my guest. This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't you go anywhere now.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyND.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on bbsradio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedros. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyND.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on bbsradio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Hi, this is Donna, and telephone lines are open. If you'd like to give me a buzz and let me light up your life with a little intuitive insight, call me. It's 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. Remember, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then I'll tell you what I perceive. Now, this weekend, yes, it's getting closer and closer. This Saturday, I am teaching a seminar. It's a four-hour seminar. It's a great way to do it. And if you're in the western part of Washington, I invite you to join me. I'm going to be teaching about mental ecology. Ecology is a big buzzword right now. Well, I'm talking about mental ecology. We have to tend our minds just like we do our bodies and the environment around us. So we're going to jump start on some personal vision, intuitive skills, problem solving. I'll help you clarify your perspectives, objectives, and what you would like to have as your life's purpose at this time. It's all about beauty, style, and greatness from the inside out. Now, this is going to be held in Tacoma, Washington. It's the Center for Spiritual Living. It is, again, Saturday, April the 19th, that's this coming Saturday, 10 in the morning until 2 in the afternoon. It is $89, and that includes a lunch. That's correct. We're going to have a real good time having an interactive seminar, as well as enjoying some real good food. Now, if you're able to come, give us a call so we know how much food to have available for everyone. The number is 253-383-3151. That's 253-383-3151. And by the way, a portion of this seminar is going to be going towards the historical building that we are holding it in. And this is at 206 North J Street in downtown Tacoma. It's right on the corner of Division and J. But this is a historical building. This building is being given a birthday party, 100 years of age, but it needs to have some upgrades. You know, when you get to be a little bit older, you do have to have a few things lifted and restructured. Well, guess what? Same thing with old buildings, just like it is with the human body. So we are going to be putting some of that money into doing exactly that. So give us a call, 253-383-3151, if you would like to be a part of this interactive workshop that I'm delighted to present, Mental Ecology, this Saturday. Donna Siebel here. Give me a call at 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756 if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. I've gotten some interesting emails and information, and of course there's always a soft spot in my heart for animals. And I don't know about you, but I always enjoy the programs where they show different species of animals interacting with each other. Animals that you would not think in a million years would even get along. Now, how about a cat and baby chicks? A cat and baby chicks. Well, you'd think a cat with baby chicks around would be batting them around with their paws. This is just an automatic response. Cats like anything like grasshoppers and stuff like this, and they'll play with them. It's just part of who they are as cats. Now, this particular cat was a little different. Her name is Nimra. She was born in the country of Jordan, and she had given birth to 4 kittens. Now, this was sort of an odd situation that Well, I was just told there was someone on the air with me. I wasn't hearing. They usually beep me, but for some reason I wasn't hearing the beep. So let's go to the caller, and I'll tell you about the baby chicks in just a little bit. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Hello. Hi. Well, I guess the caller, I don't know what happened to the caller. Something weird has been going on with phone lines. So just give me a buzz back, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Anyway, with these chicks, there were 7 of them. Somehow or another, they got into her environment, and she adopted them. By golly, they climbed into her cardboard box, adopted her as mom, and you know what? She treats them just like she does her own little kittens. So she takes care of them. If they start wandering off, she just picks them up in her mouth, gently puts them back in the box. And she doesn't go after them. She doesn't harm them. She's just nurturing them like she does her little kittens. A little bit different, wouldn't you say? How about a whale that's giving dolphins a joyride? This happened in Kailua Kona, Hawaii. And there was a woman, Lore Mazuka. She saw this herself. She saw 2 bottlenosed dolphins lying on the head of a humpback whale as this whale was swimming along. And he didn't mind this at all, but this is what amazed her. She said the whale slowly and deliberately picked up its head, lifting one of the dolphins straight up into the air. And the smaller sea mammal arched its back, hanging on for the ride. They splashed back in down into the water, and then the 2 dolphins swam off. You wouldn't expect that to happen. Really amazing. Now, there we heard the beep. Hi, this is Donna. Welcome to the show.
Hi, this is...
Hello?
Hello?
Hmm.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, now I can hear you, hon. Hi,
okay.
What's your first name or initial?
T.
And where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Paris.
From Paris?
Yes.
Paris, France? Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Well, I am so glad to hear from you.
Oh,
welcome
so
to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. It's my first time listening to you.
Well, that is absolutely amazing. How did you hear about the show?
I guess the universe somehow connected me to the radio station site, and so that's how it happened.
Well, that's wonderful. So let's get down to business with you, T. The first thing that I am aware of with you is that you have a good business mind, but you need to develop and refine your communication and your negotiating skills. Now, they go hand in hand, but I'm getting them as two separate designations. You can communicate very well in certain environments comfortably, but you are having to expand your communication refinement into different cultural arenas. You also are going to have to become a tougher negotiator. Now, I don't know what kind of work you're involved with or what your aspiration is for a professional level of expertise, but I am looking at you in an international environment, and I'm seeing the environment predominantly male. So I think one of the reasons that you're having to learn a more refined level of communication is because the male processes things differently than the female does. He uses words differently than the female does. So it is going to be very advisable for you if you can find a male mentor as well as a female mentor who are really skilled in the areas that you wish to become very, very knowledgeable about.
Okay.
And go to them and say, I need to educate myself. I can only go so far. Would you be willing to be my mentor? And I think you're going to have some very, very good support here. Now, you've got a lot of hard work. This year is going to be very demanding of you. Your personal life, sometimes you're going to wonder if it's ever going to have sort of a smooth rhythm to it. And I would say you'd be bored out of your mind if it did. So you really are in the right place for yourself at this time.
Okay.
I am looking at you having one, two, possibly three different homes.
Okay.
I don't know that you have to own all of them, but it seems like you're going to have a home in the United States. Europe is going to be important. I'm not sure that Paris is going to be the home, but it would be more like Italy or Spain.
Okay.
And then I am looking at another location, and a couple of things are flashing in, and I'm not quite sure what they're representing. One was a place in Africa, in southern Africa, and another was a place in Australia. But I don't quite get the connection. I'm not able to get clarity on those two locales. They don't seem to have the force like the U.S. and Spain or Italy do.
Okay.
But I do think that you will be a world traveler. I think you're going to write about 6 books. And each and every book that you write is going to have a very, very poignant message to it. So I think you're going to find that all of the skills that you can garner, refine, polish, it's going to bless you a thousandfold and then some.
What question
would you like to ask me today?
Wow, I think you just sort of covered something. I'm digesting what you just said. It's phenomenal. I was just sort of called about finding a partner to share my life, to create a family, my soulmate or something like that.
Well, I'm going to be very, very practical with you.
Yes.
And I say it because I am looking at a bigger picture.
Okay.
You need to understand that you're just not in this experience just to be married, have babies, and that's going to be it. It's not going to work that way for you. You've got too good a mind. One of the biggest drawbacks with a lot of what I call traditional thinking. And believe me, I'm very much in favor of a lot of traditions, and I think being married and having a family is a good thing. But you are in a world and of an age that if you get stuck in what would be called nostalgia, you are going to wonder why you're not satisfied.
Right.
You're going to wonder why you become irritated over things that you shouldn't become irritated over.
Right.
So I want you to have integrity with yourself. I want you to be aware that the man that is going to be the partner, you could easily, this is going to really thrill you, you could easily be married four times.
Hmm.
Easily.
Right.
But I would say if you are discriminating and look at the qualities of character that you want in a spouse first, then the rest will follow.
Great. Okay, well.
Aim for quality.
Yeah, and I'm going to look for that mentor to raise my communication skills. And because I think this is so on target for what I want to achieve. So I think that was very good for me to hear what you just said. Thank you so much.
You are very welcome.
Okay.
And thank you for calling in from Paris, France. That is just delightful.
Thank you. All right. Blessings.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be right back. Don't go away.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Let me give my phone number out, 877-876-5227, Canadians, 888-815-9756. Just give me a buzz. I'll be happy to light up your life with a little bit of insight. I had mentioned the other day, I wanted to share a story about a woman who decided that she was going to fight terrorism in a different way. It really impressed me because this woman has got a battle of her own that she is waging. It all came about because her son was killed in the event of 9/11. Sally Goodrich is her name. I have a picture of her in front of me. And this picture is showing her with some students in a girls' school that she founded. And her words are, "What better way to fight terrorism than to provide education?" What a better way to fight terrorism than to provide education. She's educating the girls, but let's go into her story a little bit because it's quite a special one. When her son died in the second plane to hit the World Trade Center, she went into very, very deep despair. Sally began to drink. She was then diagnosed with ovarian cancer. She considered suicide. She said, "I was at the bottom of the pit." She said, "My life, my faith, my desire, my ability to live, there was nothing left. It was all gone. She was empty." Well, in August of 2004, She received an email from a U.S. Marine, Major Rush Filson, one of her son's childhood friends. And it started making a difference in her life. He told her and her husband about the dire need for school supplies in Afghanistan, where he was. She said something turned on inside of her. That was the beginning of the turnaround from the bottomless pit that she had been in. She said she calls it a moment of grace. And she felt her son's spirit back in her life at that time. Those are her exact words. Well, Sally and her husband began to dedicate themselves to responding to terrorism in the way they believed their son, what he would have wanted them to do, with a sense of justice and sensitivity to other cultures and faiths. And so she said, I felt like I had to honor my son by becoming involved with this. Now, what they did in the beginning was just raise money for supplies, and they'd send them to the Marine Major Filson. Now, Sally is in her early 60s. She's the coordinator of academic achievement programs for the disadvantaged in North Adams, Massachusetts School District. She got the concept that she'd build a school in Afghanistan. You know, just one of those little ideas that sometimes occur. Well, they created a foundation, the Peter M. Goodrich Memorial Foundation, and in 2006, they dedicated a two-story building big enough for 500 girls in the Logar province, about an hour south of Kabul. Now, she made a trip to Afghanistan a year ago, April, and it was her fifth in 3 years, just to see how the school was faring. And there was all kinds of stuff going on. There was a new offensive, whether it was suicide bombings and other attacks in the south. One of the schoolgirls had been shot to death and another had been wounded. Rebels had delivered hundreds of night letters, that's what they're called, and they put them on houses, they were slipping them under doors, even delivering them in person. What they were doing, what the terrorists were doing, was threatening the families with death. They'd kill them. And Sally's most trusted advisors didn't want her to take this trip from Kabul to the school, but she said, I am going to see these young girls. This is what my son would do. I am going to do the same. These girls are taking risks every day just to go to school. I am going to take the risk to be right there with them. Now, after she arrived in Kabul, two vehicles with armed guards sent out for the school. The convoy made its way past military checkpoints and into the farming valley of Logar, surrounded by the snow-capped peaks of the Pagman Range. And after about an hour, the SUV that Sally was in found wonderful fields filled with a lot of growth that led up to a two-story school. And it was on a bluff, and she could hear the sound of the young girls playing in the courtyard. Cluster of them from kindergartners through eighth grade, just when she came in, just surrounded her like a bunch of little honeybees. They all had uniforms of black smocks and white head scarves. They were thrilled. Now, the principal of the school is a woman named Shama. She was right there on the front step waiting to greet her. They hugged each other. And I have pictures of these young girls in front of me, and they are just delightful. They look like any young girl anywhere in any school, happy and smiling. The students wanted to show Sally what was going on. They were absolutely thrilled to have her there, and because she had been an educator, she was right in her own environment. And the girls came and talked to her, told her about their concerns. One of them, who was 14 years of age, her name was Pashtana. She was 14 years old. She said she was old enough to remember when the Taliban was firmly in control and forbid girls to attend school. She said, I was so bored. I was mad. We couldn't be angry. Our parents were afraid for us that the Taliban would beat us or put us in jail. Well, Sally eventually had to leave, and at the front door of a school, there was an old rusted part from a Soviet tank which served as a school bell, and There was a frayed rope by it. There was a guard, an elderly man with a beard, and she said his face was as wrinkled as anybody's face could ever be. But he was the one that was in charge of the bell. When he'd ring the bell, the girls knew it was time to leave school. They were all so thrilled that she was able to come. And so was she. When Sally Goodrich returned from Afghanistan, she had to go through surgery and chemotherapy because her ovarian cancer had come back. But she said, you know what? That's okay. Because it makes me aware that I must really focus on this school and what I'm doing. She said, helping these children gave us our lives back, and I don't know how else to thank them. One person makes a difference. In this case, it's two people, a husband and a wife together. But Sally's story is one, if it doesn't touch your heart and your mind, I don't know what can. But she decided she was going to fight in a way that nobody else would fight. She was going to fight in a way that would eliminate the enemy through education and knowledge. And that's what we have to remember for ourselves. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You're the boss of your space. Honor it for others as well. This is Donna Sebo. We'll talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.